Gerhardt's back.
The more things change, the more they stay the same.
From NJ1015.com, this is the new Jim Gerhardt Podcast.
Well, hello, I'm Jim Gerhardt, along with Patrick Labrie from New Jersey 101.5 News. Pat, I got to start today to get something kind of off my chest, in a sense. I've been wrestling with the devil, or with the angels, I guess, to put it that way. And
sure.
Gone to the mat with the numinous powers over this. It gets down to this with the sentencing, the big stories you've seen, the sentencing of Carton.
Yes.
Who people didn't know used to work here years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And going back to those days, I don't know what's happened since then, but going back to those days when he was here for about 3 years, he was pretty well universally considered by the staff to be, as I'd expressed before, a cancer on the radio station.
Mm-hmm.
Here was a man that operated out of relentless malice toward former or fellow employees, especially me. I don't know why. I never met him.
Okay.
Never met him in 3 years. I did the morning show. He did the afternoon show.
Right.
There was about a four-hour gap in between, mm-hmm. so I was gone. He came in. But for some reason, every day, he would come up with something to malign me. I don't know why. He used to say, well, that old guy in the morning. Right. And so I, at the time, you know, people would say, well, why don't you get back? Well, there's an old axiom that I think is very sound that says, never get into a pissing match with a skunk. And I thought that was the better part of discretion there.
Yeah, yeah.
But he did totally malicious things.
Mm.
One, for example, as a classic example, I was shopping at a market, and we were on television in the morning at the time.
Yeah.
And so people locally would get to know you and who you are. I was in the checkout line, and a lady came in and said, do you know what they're saying about you on the radio? I said, well, no, I have no idea. Well, it's awful. You should hear what they're saying about you in the afternoon. Well, come to find out, he had come up with a story, and they did about 20 minutes on this, that I had made fun of ladies with breast cancer and had maligned them and was somehow disparaging them.
Mm-hmm.
In my wildest flight of fancy, would never even evil fancy.
Right.
I would never have thought of such a thing.
Right.
It was ridiculous.
Most people wouldn't.
No.
Yeah.
And yet, this is the kind of stuff that he did. And at the time, it got bad, and so I talked to the general manager of the station, and said, "Look, at least in that case, have him go on and say that was a mistake. That was not true. Nothing like that ever happened."
Yeah.
Well, the manager says, well, no, he doesn't apologize for anything. I said, no apology, just say it was wrong. Well, he doesn't do that. And I said, well, Andy, why do you put up with this stuff?
Yeah.
He said, well, he's going to make me a whole lot of money.
Right.
Now, at the time, I thought he meant, oh, he's going to get great ratings, which at the time, his ratings weren't any different than anybody else's, except in his mind.
Right.
He was running the radio station.
Right.
And everybody else here was sort of hanging on his coattails. Lucky to be able to feed our families based on his genius, which he expressed to everybody. But I looking back, and I had to think after this, the Ponzi scheme.
Yeah.
Maybe he's letting the general manager in on the Ponzi. I don't know. He was going to make him a whole lot of money. The point is, and I think what gets me now, this was a very unhappy time, and he would do this daily. Now, he had a toady sidekick, and the sidekick was a good broadcaster, but he never got a chance to broadcast goodly, because his job was simply, everything that Carton said, his job was to say, that's right, oh, indubitably, yeah, without any doubt. And so he sort of went along with the gag. He had to, I guess, to keep the job.
Yeah.
But in spite, it left some very bad feelings, bad feelings. I notice now, I guess what brings this up and brought it back to light, the immense public relations campaign that's being put on right now to save him. Now, he was, for anybody who might not know this, and I wouldn't expect everybody to, he was involved in, what, $5 million, I believe it was, financial scam.
Yeah, I don't know the exact... I don't know the exact figure, but it was wide-ranging.
And in a sense, he stole money from people through fraud.
Yeah.
He was convicted of it. Many accounts, a laundry list of accounts.
Yeah.
Now, his, as best I can remember, is probably the biggest financial fraud since Bernie Madoff. Well, Bernie Madoff,
right,
manned up.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And he said, I did it. It was wrong. And he faced up the logical consequences of his act.
Sure.
He didn't put on a public relations circus and claim, you know, the usual thing. It's obligatory to say you were abused when you were a kid and you were picked on in school and all of this business. Mm. And M&M's melted in your hand when you were a kid. And right. This sort of got me. And you get now the people who are defending him and begging for mercy from the court. I don't know who the judge is, know nothing about the judge. Judges are human.
Mm-hmm.
They may be affected by this. And so we have former Governor Chris Christie is begging now for, mercy for this wonderful person.
Right.
And why? I don't know his motives, of course. Obviously, he has a motive.
Yeah.
But will this set some kind of a mood in the judge to actually mitigate the sentence? Now, his partner in this scam, the partner got, 2 years?
Yes, I believe so.
Now, you would expect the ringleader to get more, but I don't know what they are.
I don't know if that's going to happen. And when you mention this PR campaign and all these letters, there were some 90 letters that were written on his behalf.
Oh, yeah. It's very well organized.
Yeah.
And, of course, that's what I thought was kind of... Oh, and also, one of the claims is, in addition to this abuse, I have no idea about that, naturally. Mm. Could be. Who knows? But I remember he did an interview with the Star-Ledger, which is the largest circulation newspaper in New Jersey. And the interview was about politics and about him and his life.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing that had got anything back to the young life, there's nothing like that, alleged. But he did indicate that he had a very difficult time, sort of animosity to his father.
Okay.
And it seemed like what you gleaned from reading the story, the problem was that his father, who I believe was a doctor, a physician,
okay,
didn't have sufficient appreciation for his son's cosmic high qualities.
Right.
Wasn't appreciated.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's abuse in the mind of a person of that mindset. I guess it is. If you feel that you are the light of the noonday sun.
Yeah.
Then anybody who doesn't go along with the gag. But to try to make an end to the thing, the feeling I have, a great ambivalence.
Right.
See, on the one hand, you have, and I deeply believe this, the Buddhist Dharma that says when you harbor anger in your heart towards someone, it's like picking up a hot coal and throwing at them. You get burned very badly. Doesn't bother him at all. I'm sure any criticism would roll off this person's back.
Right.
So I get caught between that, and when one is supposed to forgive those who have done what to me was considered evil at that time, and the natural desire to, well, it's not a natural desire, but it's something we should forgive people.
Yeah.
I mean, this everything, every religion and moral code would say, well, you know, you're not going to get over this until
absolutely.
So I would say at this point, now maybe we'll talk some more about this next week as this gets further along.
Okay.
In spite of this overwhelming PR campaign, and again, we'll see how that works out. I would say to Craig Carton, for what you did, the malice that you endlessly aimed to me when you worked here, I forgive you. But I hope the judge throws the book at you.
Yeah, you can have it both ways. That's fine.
Thank you. I was wondering
if you want it both ways. I think that's perfectly fair and just. And it just speaks to, you know, if he truly had this malice in his heart as you have described, and I have no reason to believe that he didn't. I don't know the man, but it just speaks to some of the hangers-on that he has accumulated over the years. Not the governor, not certain people who used to work here who may have written on his behalf, but you know, to have all of these people write letters, I don't know if I could find 90 people who could spell my name.
Well, he had and I must say, and I do not understand the psychological mechanics of this, he had an almost demonic ability to influence people.
Yeah.
And to exercise power, get loyalty for people. He had his toadies here.
Sure.
But again, I just, the first thing when I saw the PR campaign and all these hearts are bleeding, I thought of the trial. And here I can see this. Remember the scene in the Christmas Story in the classroom where little Ralphie had given his story, his theme, his composition.
Right.
And then when he came in, he saw in his mind, he imagined the teacher giving it A.
Right.
And then there was music broke out, and the kids picked him up, carried him around on their shoulders.
Yeah.
Had a vision of this in the courtroom with all of this stuff.
Yeah.
The judge would be dissolved in tears from these stories, racked with sobs.
Yeah.
The jury drowned in tears. Angels, winged seraphs with stringed instruments. Tears running down their face about this poor man, this poor. But you know, again, it's the old thing, and it works, to make yourself a victim.
Yeah.
If you're accused of anything.
Something that we've talked about at length in the past.
Yeah. This is the thing. With victimization comes entitlement.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it'd be interesting to see that if this ends up a successful PR campaign.
Right.
And like the kid in Chicago, the actor.
Yeah, Jussie Smollett.
Mm-hmm. Who ended up just walking out of the whole thing.
Right. As of, just yesterday.
Then if that is the thing that happens, then I would not find it out of keeping with
right.
the current trend. So, there was, the old stream of consciousness thing going here. This is beside that. It does work. Now, this goes back a few years. This would go back to the middle 90s.
Mm.
There was a murderer. I think his young man's name was Yackie Williams, Willingboro in Burlington County.
Okay.
He had, according to what he was convicted, of course, of pretty much assassinating a lady, and it may have been more, but at a fast food store for no particular reason, a young man.
Right, okay.
And he just came in and blew him away. No reason whatever.
Mm.
And during the sentencing, at that time, there was a death penalty in New Jersey.
Right.
And they had the death penalty hearing with the jury again. Well, the lawyers played the old poor childhood, the old childhood abuse card.
Yeah.
Which is obligatory. They have to try that.
Mm-hmm.
But they did, and it ended up with a couple of jurors actually crying. Now, what was one of the things that they said? The lawyer said, can you imagine a life? Nobody ever went to this poor child and said, hey, Yackie, let's go to a hockey game.
Right.
Well, nobody ever said that to me.
Right.
Right. Oh, no. And I never met anybody. Well, okay, so enough said on that. I'm sure there's more to come. But I guess in essence, it is that I had to have to kind of deal with that one way or the other because it was a very, very difficult time.
Sure.
And it was the kind of thing that there's nothing you can do back except come in and smack somebody in the mouth.
Right.
And that doesn't solve a whole lot anyway.
No.
So, okay, moving along. Moving right along. Oh, the other thing, not regarding that.
Right.
The legalized marijuana.
Yeah.
This was the old classic thing of a mountain went into labor and delivered a mouse.
Because after
all
this
huge machinery of government, and then they ended up with not having enough votes to pass it.
Yeah.
Now, we were told before that if they didn't, they'd have to wait until after the recess.
They wanted to, Steve Sweeney initially indicated that he wanted to wait until after the November election.
But now they're being urged to push it.
They want to try it again in May is what I'm hearing.
Uh-huh. Well, it turns out in New Jersey, medicinal marijuana, if we don't accept it, the state's going to come around and give it to you in an enema.
Right.
They're just totally damn determined that you are going to get stoned
one
way or the other.
And yet now, as we talked about last week, the state's own towns are turning on it in numbers that right now amount to about a tenth of all towns in the state, and that number probably will continue to grow.
And you mentioned even maybe Atlantic City had considered doing it places.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think what's behind all this, this is essentially something that is a burning item of apostolic zeal with the left.
Yeah.
More than the conservatives, especially the progressive so-called. My idea is that they see in marijuana what Aldous Huxley saw in the novel Brave New Worlds in a soma. Mm-hmm. Remember soma? Soma was something that everybody had to take. I don't know what form. I think it's pills or whatever it was.
Right.
Dosage. But you had to take it because what happens is it provides a very docile, tranquil electorate out there. And people are just going to be sort of thrown out of intellectual gear, critical gear, and just put up with anything the government comes up with. So it's a very good form of mind control. Oh, the thing I mentioned last week that of course was very big is law enforcement, how you know if somebody's impaired.
Right.
Well, I know you saw the story that the station had on. What they're going to do is take pictures.
Right.
And then somebody later is supposed to interpret from the picture.
Yeah.
Whether you were impaired or not.
Yeah, I think that was Monday of this week. I believe David Matthau had that very story that you and I had talked about the possibilities for last week. And it almost, and this was no fault of David's reporting, I just think this is the way it is, it almost invited more questions than answers.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
But oh, I think they're just throwing up dust here.
Right.
To just sort of put that aside.
And do you see, I know that it's different parties, obviously, but do you see any parallel, because I think I do, between, you know, this was the major issue of Phil Murphy's campaign for governor.
Well, certainly, yes.
And if he doesn't get this done, I wonder how that bodes for his reelection chances, because we have been very wary to reelect a Democratic governor in this state. Now, I see a parallel to President Trump and the wall having been one of his or possibly his biggest promise. The difference between Trump and Murphy is that Trump, having lived almost his entire adult life in the media, Trump can sell a failure and Murphy can't.
Well, I'll tell you another thing. The tenets, I guess the four noble truths, if you want, of the campaign was the minimum wage.
Right.
And I understand that now has come back to possibly haunt even Democrats because they want to fiddle and toy with that. I understand that since they enacted that, and the minimum wage did not at this point go up that much.
Right.
But since that was enacted, they've lost what was published 9,300 jobs gone across the state. So they're seeing some fallout from that, and now they want to tweak that and put in a back door. And so that if economic circumstances are such that we don't like them, then we can rescind the increase that's scheduled to come up.
And I don't know what that breakdown is of the 9,300. You and I had theorized previously, and there's been no legislation put on the books actually for this, but you and I had theorized previously that one of the first domino effects might be our long-awaited controversial potential move to self-serve gas.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other thing that you had mentioned to me was fast food. And I will tell you that I, just this past weekend, I drove by our local McDonald's. And the McDonald's, having fulfilled their St. Patrick's Day quota of Shamrock Shakes, shut down for renovations.
Oh, really?
And I bet when they reopen, there will be a lot more of those DIY kiosks and touch screens that you can order yourself, leading to less employees at the McDonald's.
Well, you used to plead years ago when they were first talking about this. I mean, it's fine. You'd like to see people doing well, but most of these jobs are in the service industries part-time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very few people, statistically across the country, are engaged in full-time minimum wage jobs.
Right.
But one of the things in the fast food industry, there is an organization, I think a company in San Francisco, I believe it was, who came out with automated system of making hamburgers. And they say that the hamburgers are the best you ever tasted. They're perfect. Utter consistency.
Yeah.
Now, this is a machine.
Right.
Or whatever the robotics are that do it. You would not need help. Right. And even the cashier could be automated. They've done that in Japan with these drive-in or quick fast sushi organizations. Everything is totally automated.
Absolutely. Driving to work sometimes to do this shift, it's, you know, it'll be 2:45 in the morning or something like that. and I will stop at Quick Check on the way.
Mm-hmm.
And Quick Check has the auto checkout, like you see in a lot of the grocery stores. Yeah. So I will go into Quick Check. There will maybe be someone sweeping the floor. There will maybe be someone back at the deli counter. But if I go to the refrigerator case to get a bottle of soda and I bring that to the counter and I check it out myself, I can walk in and out of that store ostensibly without ever having seen a person.
Yeah. Well, here to me is the potential fallout from that kind of thing. If you do eliminate the young people especially who have these jobs.
Right.
Which is not only a job, it's a pastime, it's something to do. You could have, if they get into the automation business mm-hmm. with this whole huge industry,
yeah.
then they could provide a superior product at a lesser price,
right.
which is fine for the customers. But you are going to have a population of young people with no jobs.
Right.
If you eliminate those jobs.
Yeah. And I think that's a bit of a reverse from what people thought would happen. A lot of opponents said, well, hold on a second. Now you're going to have 15-year-olds that are starting their careers in the workforce mm-hmm. at $15 an hour and just think that they're entitled to that rather than starting at 7 or 8 and having to build their yeah. way up. But now they may not even have those opportunities.
And what throws something of a monkey wrench into the economic machinery is the ratcheting effect.
Yeah.
If the minimum wage goes up to a certain level, mm-hmm. then everything above it has to go up.
Sure.
Because there's always a pay differential for different right. functions,
right.
different divisions of labor.
Sure.
And so this is like the unions do, especially the teachers' union has made great capital on this.
Mm-hmm.
You keep increasing the starting pay,
right.
and everybody else gets ratcheted up, you know, yeah. proportionately.
Right, right.
So One more thing to touch on here that you would know certainly more than I, because I just noticed this morning. There is finally, and this has been coming up since back in the 70s, as I recall, a euthanasia
right.
bill. I don't know what they're calling it, but it has a long title. But essentially, it means that you would have the right to take your own life under certain circumstances.
Right, correct.
Like being pronounced terminally ill. And I think it's not having more than 6 months to live.
Yeah, you would have to have no more than 6 months to live. You would have to request this life-ending medication twice within a 15-day period for them to consider it.
Now, change your mind.
That would have to be witnessed by, I think, at least two people who are not family members. You do still reserve the right to change your mind. The most controversial part of this, though, is you get the medication, you take it home. The doctor is not allowed to supervise giving yourself this medication.
Well, it's not like the Kevorkian where they really had people in attendance.
No.
But you could have your family around if you were that
right.
morbid.
Right. Well, so this was the debate that we were having. You know, do you get into bed and take these pills and gather your family around and have them watch you drift off, you know, slowly into the afterlife? Or does something go wrong and your family has to watch you seize and flail away on what would be your deathbed if this medication doesn't take effect?
What mortal, no matter how well educated or experienced, can say how long somebody's going to live? There are people
right.
who have right. been pronounced terminally ill. You got a week to live.
Oh, my goodness.
Around 20 years later.
Right, right.
I think what a classic, well, I'm a history buff, of course. Think of Alexander Nevsky, who was sort of the first, wasn't called a czar in Russia, but he was the first, say, king, you know, consolidated a country. At one time, he became seriously ill. They assumed he was going to die. And everybody made the proper arrangements, and they fought out succession and this usual stuff. And come to find out, one day from his deathbed, he got up and said, you know, Zdravstvuyte, you know, he felt great.
Right.
And lived another 50 years.
Well.
So this sort of thing. But again, and it's hard to put yourself I'm assuming that a person would make that choice because they're suffering.
Yeah.
Because that certainly does something to you. What is to prevent you from just going ahead and taking something at home anyway?
Yeah, that's another...
What is the advantage in the legality? Is there something in the legal...
I will tell you this. On the day this week that legislation advanced, a man in New Jersey, I think this was in Parsippany, was actually charged, if you can believe this, and the terminology is not quite right, but essentially he was charged with suicide. And let me explain that. Yeah. He's 79 years old. I think his wife was around the same age, and she was terminally ill and was interested in ending her life. So he procured a gun. He sat her down in a chair and laid down a tarp in their garage, put the gun in her hand, and then, you know, went to the store. And when he came back, she had shot herself and she was dead. But now he is being charged with being basically an accomplice to her suicide.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's one angle to take. But the person that I thought of when you were saying, you know, how are we to determine how long a person can live? Can you remember 30 years ago what a death sentence, an HIV diagnosis is?
Magic
Johnson is still alive. And not only that, but owns two professional sports teams, you know, at this point. Speaks to, we don't know how long we're going to live.
This is true. I mean, you could come out a week into the waiting period, I guess, or the with a cure.
Right.
Or
right.
whatever it is. These things are always possible. Well, I don't know. It's a choice people are going to make.
Right.
They obviously are. But I just wonder why you would want to go through the complete legality, because nobody is necessarily abetting you in this.
Right.
And people just go off very quietly and do these things. I don't know. I tell you what, just wrap this up here.
Yeah.
Now that I've wrestled with the numinous powers over the
you've wrestled with your dogs too.
Wrestling with the dogs. I'm sitting. Well, this is irrelevant, but I'm sitting here with a blown rotator cuff.
Right.
Hardly able to lift a cup of coffee with my left hand as a result of breaking up a dog fight last night.
Oh, my goodness.
And the time before, about a month ago, I broke up a dog fight and lost the end of a finger.
Right, so right.
This time I didn't get bitten.
Yeah.
This has nothing to do with anything we've talked about. But I thought this was very interesting in a comment. Remember, the Reader's Digest used to have a feature called Life in These United States.
Yeah.
Little stories. And this is just one. A West Virginia industry group has successfully fought new clean water standards for the state by arguing that because so many state residents are obese, their bodies can handle more pollution. honest to goodness here. Pollution from coal and chemical plants. The new EPA-backed regulations don't account for several factors, they say, including body weight, said the West Virginia Manufacturers Association. Finally, one more. This is sort of life in this universe. NASA revealed that a large meteor exploded in the atmosphere in December, releasing 10 times as much energy as Hiroshima. The explosion occurred over the Bering Sea, which is why nobody noticed. I mean, how lucky can you get?
Right.
You get a Tunguska all over again. And you just wonder if sooner or later, everything we're talking about here is totally moot,
you know,
because one's going to drop over Suckasuma someday.
Right. You brought up NASA, which brought to mind something that I heard yesterday or the day before. There was supposed to be next month the first ever all-female spacewalk.
Yeah.
You know how they do one of those spacewalks.
Uh-huh.
And can you believe, in this era of Me Too and equal rights and Time's Up and everything like that, they had to cancel the spacewalk because NASA did not have enough female suits? Can you believe that?
I thought you were going to say they didn't have the right ethnic mixture of astronauts.
No, they didn't have enough female fitted spacesuits.
Well, I guess it's too obvious to say, why didn't they just make a couple more?
That was what I thought, but apparently that can't be done.
Well, it's their budget. You see, NASA's always crying.
Right.
Listen, Patrick, thank you. Patrick Lavery, I always enjoy your company very, very much and value your insight into the news. Good possibility. Unless some great wave of public decency breaks out, we'll do this again next week.
Thanks for listening to the new Jim Gerhart Podcast.
Still cooking, and it's bigger than ever.
From NJ1015.com.